Vayishma Yitro Chohein Midyon Chotein Moshe Eit Kol Asher Asa Elokim LeMoshe Ul Yisrael Amo Ki Hotzi Hashem Et Yisrael Mimitzrayim. OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Tu Bishvat and Parshat Yitro. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, Tu Bishvat, the 15th day of Shvat, 5771, on the secular calendar, January 20th, and Tu Bishvat is something we all remember from our childhood. Some of us have carried it through the years in Eretz Yisrael. It has that extra special flavor, pun intended, or double meaning intended, to it. And I have a quite long mini shear, let's call it a midi shear, that I just gave to the Torah Tidbits folders on my favorite halachic conundrum related to fruit, and most importantly, since it's going to be a lot, is the point or points that come from this discussion. It's not really for everybody, but I am putting it into the show, and hopefully we'll also have time, not that much, to review some ideas from Parshat Yitro. After we say some 121, since today we don't say Tachanun, and that's our psalm substitute for that occasion, I would then like to play the song Ilan Ilan, which comes from the Gemara, the Talmud, Masechet Ta'anit. If you're looking it up, it's Daf Hei Omid Bet, page 5b. And the Gemara says, Emshol Lecha Mashal. I will give you an example. Actually, I should wait until after Psalm 121, so let's do that first. Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph. Shir Lama Alot Esainai El Haharim Meayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Meim Adonai Osei Shamayim Vaoretz. Al Yitain Lamot Raglecha Al Yanum Shomerecha. Hine Lo Yanum Velo Yishan Shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha al yad yeminecha. Yomam hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra, yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha, me'ata v'ad olam. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha. Hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha. ומאפלה לאורה, ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב, ונאמר אמן. Back to Tu Bishvat, back to the introduction of the song Ilan Ilan. It's a long song, slowish, I hope you will enjoy it. It comes from the Talmud, as I mentioned before, Emshol Lecha Mashal. I'll give you an analogy. Lema hadovar domeh, to what is it compared? La Adam Shahaya holech bamidbar, a man was walking in the wilderness, v'hoya ra'ev v'oyef v'tzamei, and he was hungry, tired, and thirsty. Umatza ilan, he found a tree, Sheperotav mitukim, whose fruits were sweet, v'tzilo na'eh, and whose shade was very pleasant, v'eimat hamayim overet tachtav, and there was a little spring of delicious water running right by the tree. Achal miperotav, he ate of its fruit, v'shata meimav, and he drank of its water, v'yashav b'tzilo, and he sat in its shade. U'kishabikesh lelech, and when he wanted to take leave of the tree, Omar, he said, Ilan, Ilan, tree, O tree, bameh avorchecha, how can I, with what can I bless you? Im Omar lach, if I say to you, sheyihyu peirotecha mitukim, may your fruits be sweet. Hare peirotecha mitukim, your fruits are already sweet. Sheyehei tzilech na'eh, may your shade be pleasant. Could be tzilcha, I don't remember which it is. May your shade be pleasant. Hare tzilcha na'eh, your shade is already pleasant. Shetehei eimat hamayim overa tachtecha, that a delicious spring of water should go right underneath you. Hare eimat hamayim overet tachtecha. There's already a stream there. Ah, I have an idea. The Gemara says, Ella, what does he say? Yehi ratzon, may it be God's will. Shekol netiot shenotin mimecha yehiyu kamocha. That all shoots that are planted from you, cuttings, seeds that come from you, the tree, that whatever comes from you should be like you. Afata, so too it is with you, a good, upstanding, wise Jew. Bameh avarchecha, what can I bless you with? Im b'Torah, hare Torah. If with Torah, you already have Torah. Im b'osher, with wealth, hare osher. Im bibanim, with wealth, with children, you have children. Ella, rather, yehi ratzon, may it be God's will, sheyihyu tse'etza'e me'echa kamocha. May your descendants, those who come from you, your fruits, may they be like you. Beautiful piece of Gemara. It works on the well-known verse in the Torah, ki ha'adam eitz ha'sadeh, for man is like the tree of the field. And it's very much into the concept of not just Tu B'Shvat, but why Tu B'Shvat survives, even though it's technically a necessary cutoff point for various laws concerning fruit, and it's not per se any kind of holiday. It became something and it endures because we relate as people to the fruits, to the trees of the field. And this piece of Gemara takes that as an analogy in a beautiful way. As long as I'm talking about trees, let me also add the famous poem by Joyce Kilmer. I was very surprised when I learned that Joyce Kilmer was a pen name of a guy. And he wrote, I think that I shall never see a poem as lovely as a tree whose hungry mouth is pressed against the earth's sweet-flowing breast, a tree that looks to God all day and lifts her leafy arms to pray, a tree that may in summer wear a nest of robins in her hair, upon whose bosom snow has lain, who intimately lives with rain. Poems are made by fools like me, but only God can make a tree. And this is something that is very, you know, it's interesting. The midi shir that you're going to hear is about a very technical aspect of brachot for fruit. I like doing that because I think it creates an interesting puzzle and has a very interesting solution, which is more than just the solving of this particular halachic problem, but there's a concept behind it, as I said before, maybe a few concepts. But what I'm saying now, maybe as an introduction to the more mundane aspects of Tu B'Shvat, and I really don't want to use the term mundane, so I take that back. This is, you know, the concept that goes beyond fruit and goes beyond the trees from which they grow, and it goes to nature and it goes to God's creation of nature and creation of the world. As the punchline in the poem, "But Only God Can Make a Tree," our sages definitely recognized the very, very specialness of a tree, because in composing brachot, blessings to be said before food, somewhere along the process, they came up with a catch-all universal blessing that literally covers any experience of eating, drinking, even smelling fragrant things, seeing things, experiencing nature, because shahakol nihya bidvaro, that everything that exists, exists because God said so, is a statement of belief, and it covers everything. And yet our sages saw the extra specialness of producing produce from the ground, and within that, because all the five other brachot, which we say before food, are all from that category of that which comes from the ground, starting with the general Borei Pri Ha'adama, to the more specific Borei Pri Ha'etz, to the more specific blessing for wine, Borei Pri Ha'gafen, referring to one kind of tree-like plant, the grapevine, to the specialness of grain in Borei Minei Mizonot, and to the very special quality of bread as the staff of life, to Hamotzi Lechem Min Ha'aretz. Five out of the six blessings all relate to things that are grown from the ground. And obviously, our sages attached a very high premium to it and wanted us to be mindful of that specialness. And yet, the tree also has a very singular position, because we recognize that it does not just give fruit, for which we say the special bracha Borei Pri Ha'etz, but even before it gives fruit, when it fruit trees blossom with beautiful flowers, pleasing to the eye and fragrant to the smell, there's a special blessing once a year in the springtime, specifically in the month of Nisan, that is said for that experience. And a magnificent forest is acknowledged when it wows the person who observes it with a special bracha, shekochalo ba'olamo. This is how it is in God's world. And this relationship between trees and people, and the analogy that's made by the Torah itself and by this Gemara that the song will contain, says a lot. And it goes to the core of the esteem and the feeling that we have towards Tu B'Shvat. But, as I said, the Midi Shir, which you will hear, and I'll probably have to cut it down, is about a mundane aspect. But, again, I use that word, again, I regret having used it. It's a halachic detail, which some people will say, too much, you're mixing me up, you're confusing me, I don't really appreciate and relate to all of the details and the nuances. If you could get past that and see how significant a message there is in the tiniest detail, then you will be more attuned to the Torah Judaism that I talk about on this show, and I write about in Torah Tidbits, and is my way of life. Ilan, Ilan. Okay, I made a decision. The mini shiur from before was around 30 minutes, which I would have to cut down to fit anyway, and I'd leave no room for Yitro, which I do want to spend time talking about. So I'm going to do a short version of it. I think I've done it in the past anyway. It came up a couple of years ago, and it's been my favorite Tu B'Shvat question to pose to people. I'll give you an idea of it now, then there will be the break, which some people don't experience when the two halves of the show go together, and then we will start with a short version of the solution and hopefully the points that come from it without the discussion that you can hear in the background in the recording of the midi shiur. It basically involves what's called kidima in brachot, priority. When you have two foods and they have the same blessing, and one blessing is going to cover for the two of them, which one, if any, gets the honor of the bracha over the other? When you have two different brachot to say on two different foods, which one goes first and which one is honored with that first place position? And it's different from bracha to bracha. This will focus on fruits, both fruits of the tree as well as fruits of the ground. And on that note, hold that thought, and we'll be right back. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Tu B'Shvat and for Parshat Yitro, if we get there. I said right before the break that I will try to condense the content of the Midi Shir that I gave to the folders earlier today, and here it is. It deals with priority in brachot, and that has a few different parts to it. First case, this is all introduction. Raisins and dried apricot are the two fruit that you are planning on eating, each of which is a borei pri ha'etz. Together, one borei pri ha'etz will cover both. Which, if either, gets the priority and the honor of having the bracha said with it? Answer, raisins, because raisins are made from grapes, and grapes are one of Shivat Haminim, the seven species mentioned in Devarim, Deuteronomy 8:8, in describing the land of Israel. Even if you like apricots better, within the same bracha of Borei Pri Ha'etz, Shulchan Aruch says, priority and honor of the bracha goes to Shivat Haminim. That's the first case. Raisins and apricots, which you like better, raisins get the honor of the bracha. Next case. Apricots and dried pineapple rings. Pineapple is a plant. It is a borei pri ha'adama. Apricot is a fruit of the tree, borei pri ha'etz. Which gets the honor of the bracha first? In this case, there are two brachot to recite. Answer, if you like one better than the other, then it gets the bracha first, even if that happens to be ha'adama. So if you like the pineapple rings better than you like the dried apricot, then you say a borei pri ha'adama on the pineapple first, and then a borei pri ha'etz on the apricot. If you like apricot better, its bracha goes first. And if they're both the same and you can't choose which one you like better in general or even now, then priority goes to ha'etz over ha'adama, because it's a more specific, less general bracha. But if you like the ha'adama fruit first, most, it gets the honor of the bracha. Summary, apricots and pineapple, and you like pineapple better, pineapple goes first, and then ha'etz on the apricot. Third situation, pineapple and raisins, and you like pineapple better than raisins. Which gets the honor of the bracha first? You might think, since the raisins are part of Shivat Haminim, the seven species, that it takes priority. The answer in this case, according to the Shulchan Aruch, is which you like best. That is called chaviv, the one that's dear to you. The reason there's a distinction is because you are going to say a bracha on the raisins also. The question here is only which bracha you say first, and then chaviv is the determining factor. When it was raisins and apricots, which you like more than raisins, there was only one borei pri ha'etz to be said. Honor goes to Shivat Haminim. Now let's put it together, because that's where you get your interesting conundrum. Raisins, apricots, And let's go to banana chips. I use the example of dried fruit because that's more common for Tu B'Shvat, being the time of year that it is, than an array of fresh fruit. But you have both as well. Raisins, apricots, and banana chips. And you like apricots the most. Your second favorite among these three are the banana chips. And raisins, which you like, a third place. Now here's the problem. Apricot has priority over the banana chip because you like it more. And between the ha'etz on the apricot and the ha'adama on the banana chips, chaviv, what you like better, takes priority. Banana chip has priority over the raisin. Same reason, chaviv, in this case with two different brachot, just like before, overrides the ha'etz even when it's one of Shivat Haminim. Raisin has priority over the apricot, because they both have the same bracha, and the honor goes not to Chaviv, but to Shivat Haminim. So you have a situation, which is like rock, paper, scissor. Rock beats scissor, scissor beats paper, and paper beats rock, and rock beats scissor, and it keeps going around and around and around. Here you have raisin has priority over apricot. Apricot has priority over banana chip. Banana chip has priority over raisin. We're talking, of course, that you like apricots the best and banana chip second. If you happen to like raisins the most, there is no question. It goes first because it's Shivat Haminim, and it doesn't matter whether it's the first two different brachot, one bracha, ha'etz, it still goes first because it's your favorite. But here, specifically, the way the hypothetical is presented, the apricot is what you like the best, banana chips second, raisins third. Therefore, raisins have priority over apricot, apricot has priority over banana chip has priority over raisin, and it keeps going around and around and around and around without any satisfactory solution to this dilemma or conundrum. Now, before I present a solution, which I heard from Rabbi Reuven Aberman when I posed this to a lot of different people, and his answer rang truest in my ear, I want to set down certain ideas that go way beyond the nitty-gritty, better than mundane, the nitty-gritty of this question. The concept, which we already discussed, that our sages subdivided categories of food and gave them different brachot, which means a different thought process on our part. Not that I expect that every time a person makes one of these brachot on food, he thinks of the whole thing that goes into it, but we have opportunity to reflect. Tu B'Shvat is a good day for that, and which is why I bring it up. And it helps us sharpen our appreciation for the different foods that we eat. Second, that there is such a thing as kedima in brachot, priority, which goes first. That is not a given. Our sages could have said, if there are multiple brachot to be recited, then do it in any order you want. Or, if there's many different foods with the same bracha, pick one, anything you want, and make the bracha on it. But the concept behind teaching us that Shivat Haminim, the seven species, which in the case of fruits includes five fruits, olive, date, grape, fig, and pomegranate, are a reminder of that whole portion in the beginning of Parshat Ekev, where Moshe is preparing the people to go across the Jordan River and emphasizing how special their relationship with God is and how wonderful the new land into which they will travel and which they will take over and which they will settle and have is special. That is triggered by this mundane discussion of, I have raisins, I have apricots, I like apricots better, but I'm going to make the bracha on raisins because they are mentioned as grapes in the pasuk of Shivat Haminim. That's an important idea also. And it matters because it sharpens our appreciation of not only the foods that we eat, but more importantly, the God whom we acknowledge and thank and bless in these brachot, which our sages composed for us. And that's no small thing. Back to the dilemma. technically, you would have a humorous situation of reaching for a raisin. No, no, you have to reach for the banana chip. No, no, you have to reach for the apricot. No, no, you have to reach for the raisin. And you're back where you started from, and you will go around and around and around in a circle. It turns out that when Shulchan Aruch presents its halachic ruling that the raisins have priority over the apricots, even though you like apricots better, that not everybody agrees with that. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch atypically quotes the Rambam by name, saying that when it comes to a choice of which fruit within the same blessing you give honor of the blessing to, Shivat Haminim does not enter into the issue. It is purely chaviv, what you like best. Based on the Rambam, whose opinion we don't follow in this case, but based on the Rambam, apricot would get the bracha. And it would have priority over the banana chip because you like it the best. It would have priority over the raisin because you like it the best. Which means if only the Rambam's halacha would be the definitive ruling, we'd have no question. So here you have an interesting phenomenon. You have a question because the definitive ruling in Shulchan Aruch creates this situation of around and around, and you can't choose either, any. Then, in that kind of situation, you have a fallback. The fallback is the dissenting opinion that we didn't paskin like, but now it comes to rescue. Because it's on the books, and some people follow it, but that's not the point. The point is, it is a machloket, a dispute, where there is the prevailing winning opinion, we'll call it, and the dissenting opinion, which takes over in that situation where you cannot satisfy the definitive ruling in the first place. That's the beauty of it. And therefore, on this practical example, apricot would get the bracha, following the Rambam, who in this case saves the day, because it is impossible to satisfy the Shulchan Aruch. Just one other example, and there are many in halacha like this. Till when can you daven shacharit in the morning? Let's say 10 o'clock is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, and we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. 10 o'clock is not exact, because it floats through the year, depending on sunrise, sunset, the length of time between those two times, and the end of the fourth hour of the day, the first third of the daytime, which can be 9:30, it could be 9:45, it could be up to 10, a little bit later, whatever. 10 o'clock. Tana Kama, the other opinion in the Mishnah in Brachot, said you could daven shacharit until noon. We don't follow that. You must daven shacharit before the end of the fourth hour, which means before the end of the first third of the day, not the half. Okay, what do you do when it's 9 o'clock and you have things to take care of, one of which is to daven shacharit? You have to daven before 10 o'clock deadline, or quarter to 9, 10, whatever. But what happens if you wake up one morning at 11 o'clock? Is it too late to daven shacharit? If we only had the definitive ruling that 10 o'clock is the deadline, waking up at 11 means you missed shacharit. However you make that up with tashlum at mincha is another story. But you cannot daven shacharit at 11 because the deadline is 10. But that's if we didn't have a dissenting opinion. The existence of the dissenting opinion led our sages who formulated the halacha to tell us the following. If it's 11 o'clock and you have not davened yet, for whatever reason, you may daven now. Why? Because the dissenting opinion, which we don't follow, is that noon is a deadline for shacharit, and I have no choice. I can't daven this morning before 10 because I was sleeping before 10. Should I have set an alarm to wake me? Of course. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about what do you do when you wake up at 11 o'clock in the morning? Choices. Too late for shacharit because the halacha is only until 10 o'clock. Choice B. Daven shacharit now at 11 o'clock because there's an opinion that's preserved on the books that says you could daven until noon. Answer B. That's the way it works. Otherwise, we would have definitive rulings without a machloket, without a dispute. What's the value of a dispute if we don't hold by the minority opinion, or the one that's not considered the halacha? What's valuable about it is extenuating circumstances. And in the case of our fruit, the, quote, extenuating circumstance was, we don't know which one goes first because of the rock-paper-scissor problem. Enough said on all of that. Okay, let's see what we can do with Parshat Yitro with the time remaining. Parshat Yitro, the fact that it's named Yitro, who was a Midianite priest originally, the father-in-law of Moshe, and later joined the people of Israel, converted to Judaism, in whatever that means or meant in those days, starts out with the story of Yitro arriving at the encampment of the people of Israel to bring Zipporah and her two sons to their husband and father, Moshe. He relates how he heard all of the wonders that befell the people, and he joins with them. Commentaries explain, based on Midrashim, that he had experimented with other religions in the world and came to Judaism as a choice, an informed choice of worship. Then it has a episode, an anecdote, more than that, of Yitro going out and seeing what his son-in-law does for a living. And he watches him from morning to late at night, listening to people, answering their questions, settling their disputes. And he says to his son-in-law that it's not very efficient the way Moshe does it. The people are short-tempered, waiting so long to speak with him. He's overburdened, and he should appoint people to handle the lesser cases and bring the difficult cases to him. And God confirms that Yitro's advice is good, and so it becomes a system of courts. The details at this moment are not important. The question is glaring. We have just finished reading in the Torah last week about fleeing Egypt, coming to the sea, crossing the sea, the Egyptians drowned in the sea, the people singing to God, the episode of water miraculously being sweetened when Moshe throws in a special stick that God shows him, the episode of the manna from heaven, miraculous protection from God, provision from God of food and drink, the battle against Amalek. Before Parshat B'Shalach last week, we had read of the actual Exodus. Leading up to it were the three plagues at the end of the list in the beginning of Parshat Bo. Before that, in Parshat Va'era, the prophecy and the miraculous set of plagues which brought Egypt to its knees. We have been reading of a dramatic, dynamic, lofty period of our early history. Shortly in Parshat Yitro will be the loftiest of all, revelation at Sinai, the receiving of the Torah, God speaking directly to the people, the Ten Commandments, the mountain smoking and fire, sound and light being mixed up and experienced by all of the senses of the people, mighty sound of the shofar, thunder and lightning, awe-inspiring, or more. And stuck in between, at the beginning of Parshat Yitro, is Yitro, the visiting father-in-law, looking over Moshe's shoulder, seeing how he handles the people day by day, and according to just about all of the commentaries, this did not happen before Matan Torah. It happened when things settled down and there was a day-to-day life that the people were having. So the question is, we have lofty, 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 and stuck in an event which didn't even happen then, of down-to-earth, practical, father-in-law giving advice. Maybe you could joke and say it's a miracle that a son-in-law accepts the advice of the father-in-law. But that's just a joke, because the reality is God told him to listen to Yitro. What's it doing here? A suggested answer, an approach for understanding what it's doing here and what the sedra that contains the first part, the major part of the story of Revelation at Sinai, what's it being called Yitro in the first place, is that Yitro gives us an opportunity before we re-experience this Sinai revelation, the receiving of the Torah. It gives us an opportunity to focus on an individual, which not only Yitro was, but each Jew today is, and not to get lost in the entire mass of 2 to 3 million people who stood at the foot of Sinai, and according to our sources, under Mount Sinai, for the awe-inspiring experience of revelation, but you get lost in the huge number of people. One individual was Yitro, and he came to join the people of Israel without being caught up in that mass, unified feeling that even if a person wanted to dissent, he probably was dragged along by the overwhelming numbers of people who were caught up in the moment. And it gives us a perspective of someone who did not come from the descent of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. In other words, not a born Jew, but one from the outside who said, I've done an investigation and a study of what's going on here, and this is my choice. That is a great way to anticipate our own feelings. Talk personally. I am what they call an FFB, Frum from birth. I was born into a religious home. I was raised in a religious home, sent to religious schools, and I am religious. What would I have been like had I not been raised in that environment? Would I have come to it myself? If I were born a non-Jew, would I have gravitated towards Judaism or gone my merry way as whatever religion I was born into? Would I have been a sincere X, Y, or Z? You never know. But this gives us pause to think before we relive the experience of Har Sinai, and that's what Torah reading does with us. It's not just once upon a time, a long time ago, but it's Yihyu be'einecha kechadashim ki'ilu hayom nitnu. Let it be in your eyes fresh, as if today you received the Torah. So I have to examine for myself, and each Jew has to examine for himself or herself, how my commitment can be personalized and be made of free will choice, even though we're already there. And certainly, if we're not already there, it gives us another way of thinking. And I believe the fact that on Shavuot morning, where we read this portion of Revelation at Sinai again, and we precede it by reading the book of Ruth, same thing. One individual and her commitment, passionate commitment to Judaism, coming in from the outside. It's inspiring, and should inspire all those that are already here. On that note, I wish you a Tu B'Shvat Sameach for whatever portion of it is left, and a Shabbat Shalom L'Hishtameach.